And we are back with episode 789 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host tonight. We have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, 789. Huh? That sounds like a good number to play.
Definitely. And we are joined this week by...
Oh, I thought I did introduce myself. This is Gary from Jacksonville.
Okay, I think you just mentioned either that or I completely missed it. It's been a long 2 weeks, and I am still off, also coming off of my cold, as you could probably hear. As I'm progressively recording this week's episodes, I am getting a little stuffy, so yeah, we'll see if my my voice holds out. But yes, let's see here. As we are getting ready to do... our next run of episodic discussion that brings us up to date. There are literally 22 episodes on the list here. We are not going to talk about all of those. In fact, there's at least one episode here that none of us actually watched, and that includes the extended Critical Myth family. So, yeah, we do our best to try and cover what we can, but we really do get more into the shows that are at the bottom and top of our list. And we're going to go ahead and start here with... there were a ton of shows that came in at 7.5, and we just had to pick one. And this is the one that wound up getting the most scores and wound up at that in the bottom three accordingly. And it is The Walking Dead season 7, episode 12, Say Yes. Members of the group scavenge for supplies. Meanwhile, back in Alexandria, someone must make a morally challenging decision. And, like I said, came in at a 7.5. Gary, you actually liked it a little bit more than that.
Yes, as we're in the second half of season 7, or as I like to refer to it, the feel-good half season, because we're after the backlash from Negan, it's decided that everything needs to calm down a whole lot. So that's what happened. So we basically got a Rick and Michonne honeymoon episode. Or at least that's how I like to think of it.
Yes, how it felt.
Yes, they went off on the honeymoon, and the description says, scavenged for supplies and hit the mother load with not only full pallets of food and MREs, but also 63 guns to very easily pick off for the most part. And so it was a nice, calm, sort of relaxing episode. Of course, we are back in Alexandria. We still have the strife over, what's her name, still wanting to kill Negan, and that she is so upset that she missed, and she's hunting for guns herself, finds a fake BB gun. Oh, yeah. The frustration, yeah. And and I think the point that she's not vocalizing, why she has this sort of, why she's driven so alienates me from the character a little bit. That if I could relate to her a little bit better, I mean, I know what she's seen and the people that have been killed, but I'd still like to sort of hear it a little bit more from her, because I don't feel it. So she just seems crazed rather than driven. And so that's a bit of a disappointment. The mother load that Rick and Michonne found was just what they needed. Thankfully, Rick had one more day, because he just didn't want to leave their nice little, happy circle they had going there. And it worked out. They got the guns, they brought them back, and then they basically were told, well, that's nice, but that's not enough. So that's definitely frustrating. And I don't know how they can run through another cache of convenient weapons and food supplies again with it staying realistic. But you never know. Perhaps we'll see something. But like I said, I enjoyed the Rick Michonne dynamic. I think it's come together really well. The as I said, the angst from Alexandria is a little unexplained for me to some extent. And I like the idea that, of them still trying to bring the groups together, and they're trying to Rick's trying to keep his word that he made about getting the guns. So, he's working through that. And it looks like it's shaping up pretty well for a whole jamboree of all these other groups besides the Saviors. I did have to admit, at one point, I was almost afraid that they were going to get caught by the Saviors with that whole cache of everything and say, oh, look what we found for Negan. So I was very glad that that didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think. I wasn't quite as enamored of this episode. I thought it was pretty dead average. And part of that is that, yeah, you mentioned it before that this felt like the honeymoon episode, but it also felt like they wrote it in such a way that Michonne just lost a lot of her, like, independent survival skills. I mean, there was the one scene where, and I know they were playing it up a little bit, but where they're, you know, they were talking about, oh, if anything happens, you need to carry on for the community. And then it, you know, they very poorly try to pretend that, that Rick has been, you know, has fallen, and Michonne just completely falls apart. And she's willing to basically let them, let the walkers take her rather than fight at that point. And I just was thinking to myself, that doesn't feel like Michonne. It doesn't feel like her at all. I don't see that that's a good progression for her character. So that kind of took a little bit away from it for me. Yeah. And then it just felt like the subplots were with characters that I just, they're not the interesting ones. They're not the ones that I care about as much.
Yeah, so. I agree. And I see what you're saying about Michonne. A lot of people have said the sort of same thing. And the only thing I can sort of, you know, put that sort of towards is that, you know, when you think back when they showed her origins, when she was in, at that happy place, and she, when the, her husband, boyfriend or boyfriend, I can't remember who the two guys were, but, you know, when they first returned, she sort of had lost it too. It took her a while to pull back from that, and, you know, use them, you know, as coverage or whatever you want to call it. And I sort of think that was the same thing. She was back in her happy place again, as much as it could be. And, you know, when she thought he was gone, she lost it just like she had lost it when her husband returned.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that there might be a chance she had come out of it. But at the same time, I think it's not unheard of with this character that when someone that she finally allows to be extremely close to, and it'll, you know, as in a loving relationship, just it obliterates her when something like that happens.
It could be, and that could be just a sign that it's not a good relationship for her to be in right now, or for them to be doing that, that have their two main leaders in a situation where they could really find themselves compromised if something happens to the other.
Yeah.
The irony is that I don't know. Would Rick react the same way? Because he's had a whole string of people that he's been involved with get taken out by walkers, and at this point he could just be like, wow, Michonne, that really stinks. And then what was it, you know, like, how long did it take between Jesse and Michonne? Like, it was 3 episodes, so if that, so yeah, I don't know if it would be reciprocated, and I think that's part of the problem for me. All right, next on the list here, at the bottom three, coming in at a 7.25 is Grimm, Season 6, Episode 9, Tree People. Oh boy, just set the title. Ugh. A man claims his friend was consumed by a tree-like creature, or tree-like figure, and the gang learn of Eve's disturbing mirror encounter, which leads everyone to take extra precautions. Oh, really, does it now? Extra precautions. Would that be like letting the pregnant woman go off on her own to the danger, to the most dangerous area in the episode, and, you know, just, oh, everything will go well. Nothing will go wrong with that.
Don't mess with Rosalie. Don't mess with Rosalie.
Yeah, it's true, but you could see it coming a mile away. Oh, I'll deliver it to you. Oh boy, here we go. It was telegraphed to the hilt, at least for me. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not sure where they're pulling these episodes out of. I forget how many. We're gonna have 15 episodes. Six. I remember it wasn't a full season.
No, I think it's 13.
Yeah, so we're at 9, and we have another what I'll refer to, you know, as a Monster of the Week episode. I was slightly disappointed in it, honestly, just because I don't want to beat this point to death because I've talked about it in other episodes that I'd really like them to, you know, wrap up Renard's story for, honestly, I don't feel it's wrapped up by any means. And since that was sort of the story one of the stories we opened with, I'd love to see him close it out that way. And they just seem to be, burning these, you know, sort of letting these things go away. I don't know if this is like old home week where they're pulling out some old scripts or something that they didn't use before, but that's the sense I have with it.
Yeah, it really feels like they're, at least, especially in this particular episode, that they are kind of, what's the word I want to use here, or the concept? Almost like they have a list of Vezin that they could go with. They have gotten to the end. That said, I don't think that the creature or the Vessin or whatever was that bad this time. What really bothered me, though, was is that did the team really resolve anything?
No.
And this is the second or third time this season where the team was just there. They didn't resolve the problem. They didn't stop whatever was happening. They didn't have a good reason to. They literally couldn't figure out what to do, and so they just turned around and left.
Yes.
And that, I was, oh, really? Come on. That just didn't work for me. So, yeah, that's just, unfortunately, Grimm started off the season extremely well. It's had some highlights since then, but like you said, they should be spending this time wrapping up storylines, not treading their water.
Yes.
And I have a bad feeling that they're going to end up focusing mostly on whatever is going on with this mirror thing with Eve.
And, oh, yeah, thanks for introducing a new villain in the last five episodes. Yeah,
yeah, I have a feeling that's what they're going to focus their time on. That there's going to be big things that we thought they were going to resolve because they were brought up earlier in the season, and it seemed like, oh, hey, they really have a cohesive idea of how to bring it to a close, and I think they're going to just end up wrapping their what they introduced in the season premiere with this mirror thing with Eve, and that's the only thing they're really going to focus on, unfortunately. That's where my that's where my gut's telling me they're going to go.
Yeah. I hope not, but it wouldn't surprise me, yes.
Exactly. Hope for better, but expect not. Also a show that is just continuing to make me scratch my head is The Flash, Season 3, Episode 15, The Wrath of Savitar. Wally has visions of Savitar while training with Barry, but he hides them from the team. Meanwhile, a dangerous secret threatens Barry and Iris's happiness. This also coming in at a 7.25, and I'll just say, the thing for me in this particular episode, above and beyond what we talked about last week, or last episode, as far as last week's stuff is concerned, this episode hinges a ton on this constant thing that happens on The Flash, which is, hey, someone on Team Flash knows something and intentionally hides it from everyone else, when if they would just freaking communicate, so much would be left, would be resolved and wouldn't be a problem.
Yes, I agree. Why
communicate?
Cisco needs to butt in more or something to so that, you know, this stuff doesn't happen. So I don't.
But, well, Wally and them basically got Cisco to work with them to keep something secret from the rest of the teams.
Oh, that's sorry. Yes, they do that too. So
yeah. So it's almost like, wow, what are we talking? Like, come on, do we learn nothing? Also, whatever Barry thinks is the best way to resolve a problem, somebody sit him down and give him a talking to.
If it's even if it's himself.
Yes. Barry, if it's as simple as changing the jewelry that your girlfriend or fiance is wearing when the big attack is supposed to happen in the future, if that's all it's going to take, maybe you guys can come up with a more solid plan. I'm just thinking. Mm. Maybe. But, yeah, this. Anything else that you want to add in terms of The Flash?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right, let's turn our attention to something that's perhaps a little bit better in terms of the content from this week, things that we are a lot more excited about. And, Gary, you're going to take the third, the number three show for this week right here, because it's one that you gave a score for.
Yes, and it was a great show this week. What we're talking about is Elementary, Season 5, Episode 15, The Wrong Side of the Road. Holmes' former protege, Kitty Winter, returns to New York after a three-year absence to warn him that a killer is eliminating everyone involved with a case they had worked on together in London, and that they're the next targets. I was the sole scorer, but I did give it a 9. I thought the chemistry between both Watson, Sherlock, and Kitty, as well as the detective, was very good. Everything seemed to work really well together and mesh. This concept that a case was chasing them back from London was also intriguing to me. Kitty's sort of mystery life and what she's been doing, and we found out that she's has a child, was also equally surprising to everyone. So there was lots of twists and turns, and as typical fashion, you know, things twist and turn in Elementary, and it felt like it was firing on all cylinders this week. We even got Holmes. I think Holmes's line for the week was, "My father's a member of this club and keeps a very unsavory crowd company. There's really nothing you could do to me in here." to one of the villains. So it was just enjoyable as well. And Johnny Lee Miller's hair is continuing to grow back. So that's a good thing as well. He's probably at about half inch maybe on his head after his West End run. So equally good. So just everything just sort of meshed. I've always complained when they don't have that chemistry between the main characters, and everything was really good. We had Kitty thrown in for good measure. So yay.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Sorry, I don't have anything to say about that because I don't watch the show. But once again, Elementary is showing up here in the top three. We've had that happen a couple times this season. So for a show that is in its fifth season, that's pretty impressive. Mm. Also impressive is our number two show this week, which this is the first time that the show has gotten up into the top three in a while. And that is Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 15, Exodus. As Alex searches for Jeremiah and Kara investigates a series of alien kidnappings, the sisters realize they must break the rules to foil a new Cadmus plot. And we had a lot of people weigh in this week, and I think that that's part of the reason that it wound up getting a 9.13, which is a pretty high score for Supergirl. Nadim gave it a perfect 10, saying, "My favorite Supergirl episode yet. Outstanding." Henry gave it a 9, saying, "The real-world allegories can be a little on the annoying side with a show like this, but that can be forgiven when the writers and director know exactly what kind of story they want to tell and tell it exceptionally well." Gary, you gave this one an 8.5. Maybe not as high a score as some of these others, but certainly you gave it a pretty solid score.
Oh, no, I thought it was a good episode, and I understand people saying that it's topical, and the topic that they're talking about is, I guess, deportation. Now, as a side note, all these aliens were actually legally registered with the government and were in the country just fine and dandy, and it was not the government that was rounding them up at all. It was Cadmus. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think some of the parallels might be a little bit off at least, but I could definitely see where people are saying there is a message being sent. And that being said, I thought it was interesting that they went forward with Jeremiah Danvers reason for breaking in the previous week to get the alien registry database, and Cadmus was actually going around posing as police officers to collect the people, even though they actually were not. This mysterious large spaceship just popped up from nowhere, which sort of struck me a little odd too, that the DEO didn't know it was in here, and a ship that's literally supposed to carry, from what I could best guesstimate, as thousands of people, over 1,000 people, never showed up anywhere. and had a whole docking system built as well. Also seemed a little odd, but even that aside, the part with Kara and Alex at the window as Supergirl's trying to push the ship down, it got a little hokey for me. Oh yeah, you can do it. Oh, I know you can. Oh, good gosh, gee whiz, you can do it. just got a little bit much when they did it for literally, I think, three times during the course of that event, and So that took back a little bit. We got to see more of Jeremiah's reasoning for betraying his daughters, and it didn't play across very well for me. It's sort of saying, well, he was helping them deport them so that they wouldn't kill them, and it didn't ring through as that true noble cause that I was expecting them to come back with for the character. It was extremely gray, and I wasn't ready for that. And maybe it's more realistic and true to real life, and maybe I should look through less comic book eyes as I'm viewing it. But it still seemed a bit of a letdown for me. I wanted Jeremiah to be much more of a white hat guy than it seemed that he turned out to be.
Hmm. I think that that's pretty good points. I think that it... what would I add to that? Yeah, I think that it does sometimes come across as over the top. I think that we've said that before. I think that this was a good example of them doing it well, to the point where you say, you know what, yeah, there was some commentary in there, but this was managing to balance it out well. It was just on the edge of being a little over the top or a little bit heavy-handed, but you know what? They've now got their heart on their sleeve when it comes to this show. The season has always been very strong in terms of the social commentary and kind of getting into those topics and trying to have Kara, maybe in her slight naivete, but in her sense of justice, kind of apply it. And I I think sometimes it does get over the top and it's a little bit much, but this time around it was really exactly the way that it should have been. And it reminded me of other shows where you've got these character-driven means of telling these stories and exposing these ideas. And yeah, it's not unlike a certain Deep Space franchise we all know and love. So, there is a place for shows to do this kind of thing, and Supergirl is finding its voice with this. And even though I don't always agree with the way that they choose to do so, I really can't fault them for it. You know, this is how they're staking their identity within the DCW.
And while they've been making they have been issuing commentary, I feel, for a little while on various topics. This one seemed a little more heavy-handed than they're used to doing.
Maybe a little bit. Like I said, it's a balance. I thought that there were some other episodes where they kind of almost winked at the camera and broke the fourth wall. But I think that it really depends on what your own feelings are a little bit about the issues. But I said this in a discussion about the episode elsewhere, and it was actually a discussion with Bronstum about it, where I said, whether you agree or disagree with the approach that they're taking or the stance that they're taking, what's interesting is that it's causing people to talk about it. It's bringing up the discussion. And that, I think, is something that a lot of other shows would intentionally avoid. So I have to give them credit at this point for at least provoking the discussion. And when you've got a show called Supergirl that's kind of bringing up these heavy topics and getting people to talk about it in our community, that's not a bad thing. Because you know what? I would expect a Superman show to actually get into some of this too. Justice the American way and so forth. So that brings us to our number one show for the week, edging out Supergirl just a bit, but still for a very good reason. And that is Star Wars Rebels, Season 3, Episode 18, Secret Cargo. When a routine refueling mission goes awry, the Ghost crew find themselves transporting an important Rebel leader across the galaxy while being pursued by Imperial warships. And as I said, getting a 9.25, so just edging out for the number one slot. And Gary, yeah, this was your top show for the week.
Oh, gosh. This is, as best I can put it, it's almost like New Hope 0.5. This felt so much like a Star Wars movie. If it wasn't for the animation, I would believe that this was part of a movie that it was either coming out or I must have blinked when it came out. It just fits so effortlessly into the original universe of Star Wars that it almost didn't feel like a Rebel show. It felt like part of the original trilogy. Of course, the biggest contributor to that was Mon Mothma being there, and we're seeing how she, some of her background, what she was, and who she came from, and how she helped to really cement the Rebel Alliance together. And it was really fun to see that part of the origin. We've been hinting at how these different cells and stuff were going to come together as a unified group, but it hadn't happened until pretty much now, or it was about to happen. And it was a result of Mon Mothma, literally putting her life on the line and calling out the Emperor on several of the atrocities and power grabs that he had done. So I thought it was wonderful. And as I said, I almost didn't think it was a Rebels episode because it ties in so strongly to the original, to A New Hope. So I just loved the heck out of it. I watched it twice just to enjoy it all over again. I realized that not everybody might be quite as giddy about it as I was, but geez, it sure felt like they were just taking a page out of a script. It was so good. And we've talked about how, Rebels really has these moments when they shine. And this is yet another one where they really batted it out of the park for me. What do you think, John? Did it feel like you're watching? I felt like I was watching like a section of New Hope. Like, the screen panned left to right and all of a sudden we're in this scene or something that. Yeah,
they definitely were doing that on purpose. And what I felt like was that this actually was more of a tie into Rogue One than that whole Geonosis thing that they did a little while ago. This worked far better as a tie into that. Because that was the end of a process that Mon Mothma started in this episode. And that's why I was like, oh, this is neat. This is, they're directly referencing in this episode that there are various fractured factions of the Rebellion that they need to figure out a way to work together. We know that it's going to take a few years for them to do it. We know when that moment comes. It definitely ties directly into A New Hope, as far as being, you know, a precursor to it. And I felt like, unlike some other episodes of Rebels, this one, I realized that we were getting far into the half hour, and I was thinking to myself, man, this could have been an hour episode easy. This could have definitely done that. They were jumping, you know, they were skipping things that they could have been doing in the episode in order to get the story all packed in. And everything that they did was working for me. This was a really solid episode. In fact, the only reason it wasn't a 10 was because I was sitting back and thinking, man, they really had to take some shortcuts to get there.
Yeah.
It would have been perfect if it even was just another 10 minutes. I think it would have been better served because it really felt rushed. The beginning of the episode in particular, they were introducing things where I was like, man, they could really dig into this. You know, you've got these other pilots. What's the relationship with them? You know, they're a little bit of at odds with each other, and how it's almost a microcosm of how the rebellion is going to have to figure out how to work together and all this kind of stuff. And it was like, yeah, this is great. This is Rebels right here. This is what I like to see. So yeah, I definitely feel like this was harkening back to directly to things that made A New Hope work, and like you said, even the style of how they did the scene transitions worked to convey that point of view. And yeah, I just really feel like there's a lot of good reasons why this is at the top of the list. This is the kind of thing where if it translated into a live action series, I could see it working extremely well.
Yeah.
I even saw that they did some really nice callbacks to, of all things, Wrath of Khan and the Mutara Nebula. There were a couple shots that were very clearly in referencing the 3D combat kind of thing from that. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a nice nod right there. So it definitely worked. I think that it clearly belongs up at the top of our list for this week. All right, that means that we have a little bit of time to delve into a couple of the other shows here on the list. And Gary, is there anything here that jumps out for you?
Yeah, let's go back to Riverdale again, because this show still keeps hitting it for me.
Okay, and that's Riverdale Season 1, Episode 6, Faster Pussycats, Kill Kill. Love it. Valerie helps Archie prepare for his performance in the school's annual variety show, which doesn't sit well with Josie. Betty and Jughead's investigation leads to a home for troubled youth and a face-to-face with Polly. Veronica's improving relationship with her mother takes a hit after an unexpected betrayal. And, yeah, I really liked this episode. One of the things that I like about this, and I think that we did not mention before, when we were talking about Riverdale, is that Archie as the main character is not some, like, perfect, you know, central character. He's probably the biggest idiot out of everybody on the show. And it actually makes sense for it to be that way. It works better that way. If he were perfect and was the lead character that, you know, was figuring it all out, I think that this show would collapse on itself.
Well, either that or he'd have to be the villain.
Yeah, right? He'd have to be the killer, which would be interesting, but clearly not what happened.
That you know.
unless he, you know, like completely, you know, botched whatever he was trying to do and did it by accident and had no idea. But he really has no idea what he's doing. He's making really very stupid decisions. This whole episode is nothing but him making things worse.
And
it's actually pretty funny, and it's really good to watch. The parenting is just horrible in the best ways.
You're right. Yeah. Both mothers, even the dads a little. Yeah.
they double down on the things that they know are not the way that it should be, but you get this whole sense of, how do I even put this? It makes the community feel more real that you've got these generational families. It's that small town thing that they're trying to hold on to the glories of their younger, you know, of their younger selves, and they push it, their battles, onto the next generation. And you see it happen again and again, and it makes perfect sense for Archie as a vehicle to be telling that kind of a story. So this episode really knocked it out as far as that's concerned. And yeah, Veronica as one of the pussycats. Sorry, that was the shallow part, but I cannot emphasize that one enough. It was like, it had all that and Veronica dancing as a pussycat.
Oh, yes, yeah.
What more were the other highlights for you?
That Polly actually really did exist and was not Betty.
That's good. That's good. Was not Betty, but it's good for
no, no, else. But it was a nice surprise. And hey, what do you know? Mom's up to something. Or at least she might be, because Polly is well pregnant with Jason Blossom's baby. And is that the real reason she got sent there? It's that's what Betty's thinking, and it sure looks that way. So, you know, I thought that was interesting. The mother's way of handling it, saying that Betty's really nuts and that she's making everything up, was an interesting sort of defense and surprise. And I don't think I bought it any more than Betty did. And, there was that. But gosh, so this the mysteries around the person that was Jason Blossom are really starting to build up. It almost reminds me of as we talk about how this parallels Twin Peaks in a lot of ways, is the whole Laura Palmer mystery unflowing. The only way you really get to know the character is through what other people tell you about them.
Yes.
You never actually really get to – well, eventually. But for the most part, that's your only interaction with this – with the pivotal character of the show is through other people's descriptions and hearsay. So it appears as if Jason's living up to that role model. So and I don't mind. It's interesting the way we get teased out, but at least we are getting teased out with stuff. And it just keeps getting more and more complicated and complicated and – it's nice that Jughead is not just a narrator. I continue to enjoy that he is actively involved in the show, and he's not just sort of sitting around making observations. I guess with Archie being, as you said, an idiot, Betty does need some sort of confidant, and I think Jughead's a pretty good one. So I like it a lot. And Betty's mother, jeez, good gosh, she's really turning out to be a... She is not the Mrs. Cleaver that we would have originally thought she was.
Yeah, you know, and I know there are some cliches being played out there, but that's one of the things that I like about the show as well, is that you see where there's a definite construction going on here in terms of the characters, where they say, okay, what is the kind of iconic pop culture understanding of Archie, of Betty, of Veronica, of Jughead, right? And then they take it and they say, now let's turn it on its head and see, like, what would be the kind of, like, thing lingering beneath the surface. And probably the one that is the most obvious is Betty being, like, seriously over-parented and kind of trapped in this, in, you know, the role that her mother wants her to play.
Yeah, you have helicopter parents, and then you have, I guess, nuclear missile parents.
Oh, that's yeah, that's, yeah, and... What I like about that, though, is that that's what it is that they take it further. They're like, okay, you've got the archetype that she's the good girl. She's, you know, the kind of the princess of the school. She's the goody two shoes. She never does anything wrong, blah, 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 blah. But then it's like underneath of that, there's a reason why she cultivates that particular persona. It's not even her that wants that persona to be the one that's being cultivated. And you just keep layering it back, and you do it with, you know, Veronica has this particular reputation. Well, why would she have that reputation? What's the reality behind it? And how does her family, and her family situation drive it? And they've done this really nice job of setting up these conflicts based upon, you can kind of see from the outside, somebody driving through Riverdale, what they would see of these characters is what the comic book shows you. It's only when this tragedy has taken place that, you know, you start dissecting, because all of these things start coming out because of this one event that took place, which was the murder of Jason. So I think that they've done just, you know, we've talked about the show from a lot of different angles. I just think it's a matter of construction. If they had not gone through that process of really not even deconstructing, but just saying, let's add some layers to this that makes sense, I think that the show would have failed miserably if they hadn't gone through that process. And I think the reason that it is working is that you can just watch it and enjoy it for being a little bit subversive as far as the whole Archie thing is concerned. Or you can just watch it and say, here is the story of a small town having its secrets unraveled. And it just happens to be characters that are similar to the ones in Archie. I think it works out just fine. And I'll say right now, this goes up on the list. With the shows that are at the top of my list are... You know, like I said before, The Expanse, Legion, these kind of shows. This show ranks up there, and the reason that it does is that it's not really like anything else that's on right now. It's got some things that it's the only show doing it right now, and I really enjoy it for that. Kind of went off on a little bit of a soapbox on that show, but it is inspiring me as even as a guilty pleasure. It is still a very strongly and well written guilty pleasure.
I'll tell myself that. So
sure, there you go. Whatever it is that helps you get through your day.
Yes. So.
I want to just say a few words here about The Americans, season 5, episode 1, Amber Waves. In the season 5 premiere, the center sends a new operation, unlike anything before, to Philip and Elizabeth, which puts more strain on their already tense marriage and family life.
Does it involve Donald Trump? Oh, sorry.
It does not.
Okay.
Surprisingly. This got a 9 from both myself and Edmund, and Edmund here says, only a very confident show uses its extended running time to impress us on how arduous exhuming a body is. Yep. And then twists the knife. Oh, yes, they did. Interesting setup with the overly zealous recruit, and interesting reveals about old favorites, Langella acting on his own in suggesting they leave. But the heart of the show is the family drama and the dilemma of Paige, which I agree with. Paige trying to come to terms with knowing what her parents are doing and what that means on a very visceral level. And yeah, that was also one of the highlights for me this week in the show. So The Americans coming back very strong once again. Any other shows that you wanted to dig into here?
Let's see.
Good to go.
Let's just talk about Arrow for a minute. It did finish sort of in the middle range, and I thought there was one or two interesting things about it.
Okay, that would be Arrow, Season 5, Episode 15, Fighting Fire with Fire. Oliver faces his greatest challenge yet as mayor when Vigilante attacks him. Felicity continues down her dark path with Helix. Diggle leads the team in a mission to stop Vigilante once and for all. The most generic villain name ever. Vigilante. What's he do? He's a vigilante. Huh. No kidding. This episode came in at an average of 7.75, so approaching that above average mark, but not quite there. What are the elements that you wanted to talk about on this one? I know that there's a big reveal here, but
well, yes,
did you see that coming, I guess, would be my question.
No, I didn't. I didn't see that coming at all, and gosh, the speculation was rampant about what it was going to be, and the fact that the adversary turned out to be Adrian Chase was a surprise for me. I didn't expect it at all. So that's interesting, and I still can't say I'm clear on his motivations, so I guess we'll get it espoused in typical villain fashion in the next episode. But still, that took me by surprise. That, and I can't understand Felicity's motivations for continuing with with actually joining up with that Helix group. I realized they gave her some information she could use, and I'm not sure where she's taking this dark path, even though literally everyone on the show has said, don't do that.
Yes.
You know, everybody from Oliver all the way through Diggle are like, that's a bad idea. You shouldn't do that. Don't do that. But she's still going anyway. So, we'll have to see how that blows up in her face, because that at least appears that's how they're setting it up to, where there'll be an issue that way. And I enjoyed the fact that Oliver turned over Green Arrow in a sense.
Yes.
That called him out as a villain. Someone who does not follow the laws of the city and who did kill a police officer. And so, geez, that's painting a huge target on Arrow's chest that he hasn't had since, I want to say, around the second season. So, that was an interesting twist to take the blame on Green Arrow. But who knows? Maybe he can come up with another character and call himself the Azure Bow or something. Nobody will ever make the connection.
The Azure Bow. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, there's no relation. No, I don't use arrows. I use a bow. Oh, okay. But anyway, just mocking on how he went from Arrow to Green Arrow and everything was all better. But yeah, so I like that, and I'm not sure where that's going to end up, but I like the setup for it, and I think it's going to be interesting for Arrow to be a hunted man. Will he let Team Arrow 2.0 pick up all the slack and literally, you know, fade away and for a while, or is he going to go head to head against cops all the time? I'm looking forward to that, and I think it's going to ramp up the action on the show just a little bit more than it's been lately.
Yeah, I feel like there's two ways here that that this episode kind of makes me wonder what they're thinking. Because okay, Adrian Chase is Prometheus. All right. Well, how does that tie him into the first season? That's what I'm still kind of unsure about, because the whole thing was that Prometheus was supposed to tie us back to the first season.
Yes.
I'm not sure that works right now. And then there's the whole thing of, boy, they were so trying to beat the drum as far as Chase being vigilante. Well, great. He's not vigilante. Who is then?
Yeah.
So it's a reveal that actually didn't necessarily work for me. And I'm still trying to get a sense of where this story is going. If they are saying that, you know, this is still tying back to the first season, they have a little bit of work to do in these last, you know, seven episodes of the season. Seven or eight, because sometimes they get more than one.
Mm.
Or another one on top. So, let's see here if there is anything else on the list. I think we'll just go down the list as we have before. Legion, Season 1, Episode 4, Chapter 4, came in at an average of 8.75. Boy, that episode, the fourth one, that just was crazy. Black Sails, Season 4, Episode 6, 34, got an average of 8.5. The Magicians, Season 2, Episode 6, The Cock Barons, got an 8. Great title. The Expanse, Season 2, Episode 6, Paradigm Shift, came in at an 8. Supernatural, Season 12, Episode 14, The Raid, got an 8. Colony, Season 2, Episode 8, Good Intentions, got an 8. Humans, Season 2, Episode 4, Episode 4, got an 8. The 100, Season 4, Episode 5, The Tinderbox, got a 7.5. 24 Legacy, Season 10, Episode 6, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., got a 7.5. That was actually a pretty good episode. It redeemed itself slightly. It bought itself another week. I'll just put it that way. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 2, Episode 13, Land of the Lost, got a 7.5. Sleepy Hollow, Season 4, Episode 9, Child's Play, got a 7.5. And finally, The Vampire Diaries, Season 8, Episode 15, We're Planning a June Wedding, got a 7.5. So all episodes above the average mark this week.
Not yep.
bad. Any last thoughts, Gary, for this week as we close it out?
Now, was that the last Vampire Diaries episode?
No, there's one more.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes. That was not the finale. But soon we will talk about that.
Hold it together, John. Hold it together. It'll be all right. They're undead, John.
Yeah, you know, and not to get into it, but one of the funniest things was, is as I'm watching, and I was watching with somebody else, they just said, are they a vampire or a human this week? I said, they really need to have a scorecard up in the left-hand corner of the screen. At any given time, is this character, what's their status? Dead? Undead? Maybe? And yep, sure enough, there were a couple times in the episode, it's like, I'm not sure. But yes, just that as an aside. All right, that's it for this week, and we will come back next time with, hopefully, some more in-depth discussion that you will be happy to tune in to listen to. So thank you for putting up with the technical difficulties and my distractions as I was trying to resolve them throughout. Hopefully I'll get those wrapped up as well. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.